Wisconsin, a critical battleground state.
The battleground state of Wisconsin.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Wisconsin Supreme Court is now in session.
So let's talk about Wisconsin.
This is Swing State of the Union, a podcast all about Wisconsin and why it's so important to U.S. politics. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Sam Woods. Thank you so much for joining us. Wisconsin's 2025 general election for state Supreme Court is here. Voters have already been heading to the polls for early voting, and money is continuing to pour into the race from all corners of the country. The race has already exceeded national records for spending on a state Supreme Court election, and if you listen to pundits, the stakes have never been higher.
But despite all the national attention and money, many Wisconsinites say they still don't know that much about the two candidates in this race, Judge Susan Crawford and Judge Brad Schimel. So let's take a step back and learn more about the candidates who could decide the makeup of the next Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Crawford and Schimel have surprisingly similar career paths. Both have worked extensively for the government, and both are now circuit court judges. Crawford began her career as an assistant attorney general for Wisconsin's Department of Justice, becoming the director of criminal appeals, and then the chief legal counsel for Democratic Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle. She went on to work in private practice before winning an election for Dane County Circuit Court judge in 2018 and again in 2024.
Schimel started his career as an assistant district attorney for Waukesha County and was then elected as Waukesha County District Attorney, where he served for about 10 years. In 2014, he ran as a Republican for Wisconsin Attorney General and was elected, serving one term, before being defeated by current Democratic Attorney General Josh Call in 2018. After his loss, then-Republican Governor Scott Walker appointed Schimel to the Waukesha County Circuit Court, where Schimel won his election a few months after being seated in 2019. But while their career paths might align, who and what they've represented have been very different.
It's fair to say that Crawford is seen as the liberal or Democratic-aligned candidate, and Schimel is seen as the conservative or Republican-aligned candidate in this supposedly nonpartisan race. Both have, at times, tried to distance themselves from the accusations of partisan bias, but their resumes add credence to these claims. Although Judge Schimel has said the naked partisanship on the current Supreme Court inspired him to get into the race, he's made his own partisan views very clear. He ran as a Republican in his elections for Waukesha District Attorney and Wisconsin Attorney General. And as Attorney General, he acted on his partisan beliefs, as WUWM reporter Mayon Silver explains.
The Attorney General presides over, you know, civil litigation and criminal litigation that they're representing the state of Wisconsin in these actions. So he presided over the bread and butter of the Wisconsin Department of Justice, but also attorneys general sign on to federal lawsuits depending on their partisan leanings. So during his tenure as attorney general, he signed on to federal lawsuits brought by other Republican attorneys general against policies of, you know, then Democratic President Barack Obama. Some of those lawsuits challenged the Affordable Care Act, facilities for transgender students, environmental regulations, things like that.
During his time as a circuit court judge, Schimel has been a vocal supporter of Republican President Donald Trump, and that support has continued through his campaign for Supreme Court. In 2020, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled against candidate Donald Trump's bid to overturn the election, won by Joe Biden. As a candidate, Schimel told his supporters that Trump was, quote, screwed over by that decision. At a rally featuring Donald Trump Jr., Schimel posed in front of a giant inflatable Donald Trump, which held a sign that read, "Vote Brad Schimel, Supreme Court." Days after early voting began in Wisconsin, Trump publicly endorsed Schimel's campaign. Schimel praised the endorsement, saying Wisconsin conservatives must unite to, quote, "save our state, like we saved our country in November." Judge Crawford has never held a partisan office in Wisconsin, but her career also points to her partisan leanings. As chief legal counsel to Governor Doyle, she was the legal advocate for his Democratic administration. Her next job also pushed for Democratic priorities, as WUWM's Mayon Silver explains.
She then went into private practice with a law firm And her campaign website says that in this role, she, quote, protected voting and workers' rights and represented Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin to defend access to reproductive health care.
During the campaign for Supreme Court, Crawford has said she's proud of her work with these organizations. But she and Schimmel have both tried to separate their personal beliefs from how they would rule as a justice. In a conversation with us, Crawford had this to say.
When it comes to something like abortion rights, I have never stated how I would decide any case or what my opinion is on a particular type of regulation or law restricting abortion rights. What I have talked about is my personal experiences as a mother going through pregnancy and labor and birth, and the fact that I wanted to be able to make my own choices about my health care, and that I think that women are competent to make their own choices about their bodies and their health care.
Schimmel didn't agree to our request for an interview, but he has been vocal about his beliefs on abortion. Schimmel proudly calls himself pro-life, and in the only debate of the Supreme Court campaign, made clear that he believes Wisconsin's 1849 law banning nearly all abortions is valid.
It was passed by two houses of the legislature and signed by a governor. That means it's a valid law.
Crawford has highlighted Schimmel's anti-abortion stance in campaign ads, much like in the 2023 Supreme Court campaign, when Justice Janet Protasiewicz ran similar ads against former Justice Dan Kelly. Protasiewicz won that contest. The Supreme Court is set to rule on the legality of Wisconsin's 1849 law banning most abortions. But WUWM reporter Chuck Kornbach says it's unclear if abortion is as important an issue for voters this election compared to 2023.
Is the issue as potent right now because abortions are being performed in Wisconsin? With Protasiewicz started, things were on hold, right? And the procedure was not being performed, or 99.9% were not being performed. People are basically getting services. Is the issue still as potent for Crawford as it was for Protasiewicz? Crawford is certainly making the case that it is.
Alongside abortion, sexual violence has been another key talking point for each candidate. Ads for both candidates have championed tough-on-crime rhetoric, focusing on convicted sex offenders. Each claims the other has been too lenient on violent offenders.
We can't keep you safe when liberal judges refuse to actually punish violent criminals. And Judge Susan Crawford, she's the worst.
Like Brad Schimmel, who gave big plea deals to rapists, domestic abusers, and even a man caught with child.
This focus on criminal sentencing has little to do with the job of a Supreme Court justice, since they rarely give out criminal sentences.
But the court is likely to rule on voting laws. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has been a vital part of deciding disputes between the legislature and the governor over how people can vote in the state. Both of these candidates have been part of these fights in their previous roles. As Attorney General, Schimmel fought in court for Wisconsin's voter ID law and attempted to limit early voting in Milwaukee and Madison. As an attorney, Crawford fought against the state's voter ID law. Here's what she had to say at the WISN debate about why she took that case.
When it was first passed, it was the strictest voter ID law in the country, and it left a lot of people behind. There were many registered voters in Wisconsin who were unable to vote because they simply could not obtain the ID that they needed. People who were disabled, elderly people, people who were born in rural communities in poverty that never were issued a birth certificate. That's who we were fighting for.
This election, Wisconsinites will also vote on whether voter ID should be enshrined in the state's constitution. Crawford declined to say how she would vote on that question during the debate, but Schimmel had this to say about whether he would vote for or against the amendment.
I'm going to vote yes, okay? Now, voter integrity laws are critically important. The legislature has a solemn responsibility to put those laws in place, and we should all expect as voters that those laws are going to be implemented the way they're passed.
Labor rights have been another issue at the center of this election, due to the most recent challenge to Act 10. As we covered in Episode 3, Act 10 severely restricted public sector union rights in the state. As an attorney, Judge Crawford represented unions in a case challenging the constitutionality of Act 10. But she's quick to note that she was representing a client in this case, as in other cases. And what she fought for doesn't necessarily represent her personal beliefs. She told us this in an interview.
For cases like Act 10 and voter ID, I was representing a client in court. I was representing their positions in making legal arguments to court. I wasn't just stating my personal opinions in some kind of a public forum. So I want voters to understand that. I also want them to understand that I believe that those were important issues and involved important rights that people have. Things like voting rights, I think, are critical to our democracy, obviously, and that I worked on important issues like that in our courtrooms and fought for them.
Schimmel wasn't the attorney general at the time Act 10 was passed, but he has said he would have defended it in court. Still, like Crawford, he's quick to distance himself from the perception of partisan bias. He said this at the debate.
I've said I would have defended the law when I was attorney general. Of course I did. My job as attorney general was to defend Wisconsin law, not to pick and choose which laws I like or didn't like. My job was to defend the law.
But perhaps no issue has been as potent as money in this election. Specifically, who's giving it to whom? Both candidates have had ample support from wealthy donors, and each has used this to question their opponent's credibility. The biggest donor by far has been Elon Musk, the world's richest man and one of President Trump's closest advisors. According to Wisp Politics, Musk has given more than $14 million to support Schimmel as early voting begins. According to the Journal Sentinel, Schimmel has privately told supporters that, to get donations, he's had to, quote, invest in knee pads to crawl around begging people. When asked at the debate about the millions he's received from Musk, Schimmel quickly pivoted to talking about Crawford's wealthy donors.
Outside help that comes is not something I control. It is expensive and it's difficult to get your message out on the airwaves to all the voters of Wisconsin, but there's a difference here. My opponent was supported by George Soros.
Crawford has also been supported by billionaires, including Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker and philanthropist George Soros. But the money pales in comparison to what Musk has put into this race. According to Wisp Politics, Soros donated $1 million and Pritzker donated $500,000 to Crawford. In our conversation, Crawford accused Musk of trying to buy the election for Schimmel.
All of that money dwarfs any contribution made by not only any of my supporters, but any contribution ever made in any kind of state race in Wisconsin. It is just completely unprecedented to have an outsider coming in and trying to take over a race like this. Elon Musk is really trying to buy a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
We'll talk more about why big donors outside of Wisconsin are spending so much on this race later in the episode.
Given the national attention, this election has felt especially partisan for a state Supreme Court race. But at the same time, both Judge Crawford and Judge Schimmel have continued to do the dance expected of judicial candidates, showing enough of what they believe in to get voters interested, but not so much that it destroys the veneer of nonpartisanship. The question now, who's a better dancer?
Let's talk about what the Supreme Court race could mean for people in Wisconsin. This year's election could determine how the court will rule on issues like abortion, Act 10, and voting rights. As it stands, liberal-leaning justices hold a 4-3 majority on the court. With liberal-leaning Ann Walsh Bradley stepping down, conservatives could flip the court if Brad Schimmel wins in April. But if Crawford wins, conservatives could be locked out of a majority until at least 2028. J.R. Ross, editor of Wisp Politics, explains the stakes for conservatives.
If conservatives don't win this year, they in 26 have to defend the seat of Rebecca Bradley, conservative, in 2027, have to defend the seat of Annette Ziegler, other conservative. It's not until 2028 Rebecca Dalla, liberal, will be up, they can even have a chance to flip the court. And that's only if they could defend two seats in back-to-back years. For conservatives, this is it. They got to win this one to flip the court back, or they're going to be on defense just to have a chance.
For liberals, this election is a chance to defend wins they've gotten since flipping the court 2 years ago. In particular, the court's overturning of Republican gerrymandered maps may have saved Democrats from facing a GOP supermajority in both houses of state government today.
Think about it. It was not a great year for Democrats in 2024 with Donald Trump winning. If you had the old maps in place, there would have been a path for Republicans to have a supermajority in both the Assembly and the Senate. If that happens, Governor Evers is basically neutered because they override his veto, right? So I'm not saying it would have happened for sure, but you might have had that possibility. And then Republicans kind of can run roughshod over the governor. Like, he can veto everything he wants, but they can just override him and be done with it. So the stakes are huge for liberals because of what they've gotten out of this court and the changes they've seen. There are also big cases coming up about abortion. The Act 10 lawsuit's not going to the Supreme Court just yet. It will eventually. Those are all big things that if the court flips back conservatives, could have a much different result coming out of that body.
As Ross references, Wisconsin government is currently divided with a Democratic governor and a Republican-controlled legislature. Because of this, not only could important political issues from abortion to union rights be left to the court, but also basic constitutional questions about who gets power in state government.
In episode 2, we discussed how in 2018, Republicans passed a set of lame duck laws to limit the powers of incoming Democratic Governor Tony Evers after he defeated Republican Scott Walker. Chad Oldfather, professor of law at Marquette University Law School, explains how a similar case is already before the court regarding what powers the governor can wield and to what extent.
Here in Wisconsin, our governor has the most expansive line item veto power of any governor anywhere in the United States. And of course, one of the cases before the court, state Supreme Court right now, is the case in which Governor Evers exercised that power to turn a one-year increase in school funding into a 400-year increase in school funding. And, you know, the court's going to have to consider that.
Essentially, liberal and conservative interests within Wisconsin see an opportunity this election to set the tone for state politics over the next few years.
Now, let's get back to why there's so much national interest in this race.
Wisconsin Democrats are pushing back against Elon Musk, launching a seven-figure effort to counter his support for a conservative candidate in the state Supreme Court election. Their goal, cast the election as a referendum on Musk, helping President Trump radically reshape the federal government.
Wisconsin was the closest state in the last presidential election, with Donald Trump defeating Kamala Harris by less than 1% of the vote. This was the third presidential election in a row that was decided by less than 1% of votes in Wisconsin. Because Wisconsin is perpetually close, and because this Supreme Court race comes less than 3 months after Donald Trump took office, some national actors seem to want to make this race a referendum on Trump and his advisor billionaire Elon Musk's early actions in office.
Musk seems to be heavily involved in getting a good review. His political action committees accounted for over a fifth of total spending in Wisconsin's Supreme Court race before early voting began, according to WisPolitics. Dan Bice, watchdog columnist for the Journal Sentinel, has covered Wisconsin Supreme Court elections for more than 30 years. He describes texts from groups funded by Musk that seem aimed at mobilizing Trump voters to vote for Schimmel.
The text message I just got from the Musk campaign, the text message said, "This is Elon Musk's America PAC, and we think it's important to protect Donald Trump's agenda. Call this number and we'll tell you how." You call the number and they tell you to vote for Brad Schimmel.
Beyond the possibility that this race could be viewed as an immediate referendum on Trump and Musk, national interests may also be looking ahead to the next presidential election in 2028. Chris Bono is a professor of political science at the University of Pittsburgh who studies judicial elections. He explains why a Wisconsin Supreme Court race in 2025 could matter a lot in 2028, or not at all.
As we saw with the 2020 election and the attempts to overturn the 2020 election, right, and not certify it, a lot of those decisions went through the courts. And the courts were deciding who gets to count the ballots or which ballots count, which ballots don't, and so on. And so when you have close elections for other offices, there could be huge implications. The Wisconsin Supreme Court could be the one who decides who wins the 2028 election under certain circumstances. Or it could be totally irrelevant.
In Wisconsin, election season never ends, and the national spotlight is always bright. After a short break, we'll talk more about who's funding each of the candidates and dig further into the national actors who have an interest in our courts.
If you're enjoying Swing State of the Union, please share it with a friend and drop a rating wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoy conversations about Wisconsin politics, check out Capitol Notes, a podcast from WUWM hosted by reporter Mayan Silver. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts or on WUWM's flagship program, Lake Effect.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
As we've covered, money is flowing into this election at unprecedented levels. Before early voting began in March, this race was already the most expensive state court race in U.S. history. The previous record was set 2 years ago, right here in Wisconsin. Dan Bice is a watchdog columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joins us to talk about what this money is buying and who's behind it. He begins with an overview of the big donors behind conservative-backed Brad Schimmel's campaign.
Most of the money on Schimmel's side is being spent by outside actors, and Elon Musk is far and away the biggest, spending more money than anybody else. He's paying for people to go door to door. He's paying for digital ads. He's paying for TV ads. He's paying for mailers, and they're putting things on people's doors. He's got three groups that are operating. One called America PAC. America PAC is the super PAC that he created, and he mostly funds. There are a couple other people who put money into it, but it's mainly his. And he put about $250 million into that and helped Trump win the election with that. And they were very big and active in Wisconsin. They were very active in getting what's called low propensity voters to come out and vote for Trump in Wisconsin, mainly men, young men who didn't vote often. They got out around the state and got those individuals to come and vote. And that's very important in the race. There's another group called Building America's Future. Building America's Future is a nonprofit, and there are certain nonprofits that spend money. And when I write about them, I call them a dark money group because the group never has to disclose who is putting money in there. But the Wall Street Journal wrote that starting in 2022, Elon Musk became the major funder of the organization. And so it's paying for TV ads in all five markets around Wisconsin. So you're not going to escape the TV ad for that group. And then thirdly, and probably most interesting, but the smallest of them, is a group called Progress 2028. Progress 2028 is not registered anywhere. It's not disclosing anything. It's a fake group that puts out ads acting like it's supporting Susan Crawford, but it's not really. It's saying, you know, send a note to Susan Crawford thanking her for the fact that she prefers to let prisoners go rather than locking them up. Well, that's not her position, but they're trying to associate her with unpopular views. And this same group was active in Pennsylvania. It was active in Michigan and a couple other places doing similar fake ads for Kamala Harris, tying her to gun buyback programs and other things like that. And they're trying to say, we're a liberal group. And they even describe themselves as a liberal group in their ads that you see. But those are the Elon Musk groups. And then there's the other major group is called Fair Courts America. And that's Richard Uihlein, one of the co-owners of Uihlein Packaging. I think last year he and his wife were the second biggest spenders in the election overall, spent more than $140 million on elections around the country in 2024. The difference is he tends to spend money on groups that he controls. She likes to give money to parties. And in this instance, she's given almost $1 million to the Republican Party, and then that money was transferred to Schimmel. So Schimmel's raising money on his own, too. He got in the race way earlier than Susan Crawford did. And so he's been raising money since December of 2023.
And then same question, but for Crawford, who are her big money donors?
On her side, most of the money, it appears, is going through her campaign. People are giving money to her or to Democratic Party. And there's a strategic reason for doing that, and that is that campaigns and candidates, the ad rate for them is much lower than it is if you're any outside group. So right now, Republicans and the conservatives have spent more, but they both have gotten the same amount of time on TV. And so we don't know all the groups that have given money to her. We do know there are several people that the other side is like to highlight. George Soros, the billionaire Democratic mega donor, he's given $1 million at least to her campaign. The governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, has given $500,000. The co-founder of LinkedIn has given another $500,000. So that's what's going to happen, is the money is going through her campaign on one side, and on the other, it's outside groups.
Would you say there's a difference in the content or tone between ads that have been paid for by the candidate and those that are paid for by groups that are supporting these candidates?
The one difference is the outside groups are not trying to do biographical ads, as they're called. Usually in an election, when you're running in the race, and the Marquette poll showed recently that a majority of people, three-fifths of people in Wisconsin, didn't know who Susan Crawford was, despite these tens of millions of dollars that's been spent, and two-fifths of people hadn't heard of Brad Schimmel, even though he was a statewide elected official. And so you usually start off your race by telling people who you are. And Schimmel has decided to bring his family into the discussion about abortion because he's adopted two children and has said that he's fully supportive of adoption, and that's consistent with his views on abortion, that that you should focus on adopting children instead of getting abortions and so forth. But both of them have brought up their backgrounds and that sort of stuff. But then starting in mid to late February, her campaign ad started attacking him in a pretty strong way. And she had more money than he did. And so he did this interesting thing where he started calling on the outside groups. In particular, he started calling on the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, the state's business lobby, Fair Courts America, and other groups to get involved in the race because he knew they had more money than he did. And days later, they jumped in and started attacking her in a big way.
You talked a bit about why Elon Musk would be interested in this race. We are seeing a lot of national interest just in general. In your view, is this largely ideological? Are these two sides really viewing this as a partisan race? Why is there so much national interest?
The interest is because, as we know, for president, our elections of 50 states, they're elections that focus on 5, 6, 7 swing states, and Wisconsin's one of the swing states. You know, the last election was the closest election in the country was in Wisconsin. In 2020, there were 4 lawsuits asking the Supreme Court to throw out the results of the election and to take the election away from Biden and give it to Trump. And the 7 members of the Supreme Court were the ones to decide that. And in each case, the court at that time was controlled by the conservatives, a 4-3 majority. And in each case, the 3 liberals and 1 conservative, Brian Hagedorn, voted to reject those lawsuits. There were also lawsuits before the election occurred. There was one, the Green Party wanted to be on the ballot. They had a candidate who wanted to run for president, and there were problems with their paperwork. And so the election commission said, you can't get on the ballot. And the idea was that they would siphon votes away from Biden if they were on the ballot. And again, by a 4-3 vote, the Supreme Court made the decision not to let them on the ballot. And in the end, Biden won by a very small percentage, by 20,000 votes or so. And so the election in Wisconsin's important, but the election could come down to a decision by the state Supreme Court as to what happens with the results and the framework of who gets on the ballot, whether we have election boxes, any number of other things. And then after the election, whether it was handled properly and whether they should have recounts, all sorts of things like that are going to be decided by the Supreme Court. There's also this concern that voter ID is going to come up and that if Crawford wins, that she and the liberals will get rid of voter ID and that will that will have an impact on the election. So there are issues that are of concern primarily and exclusively to people in Wisconsin, but the consequences of this race could be felt nationwide. And that people who are interested in the 2028 presidential race are very much concerned and interested in what's going on here. And so, you know, the head of the National Republican, the Republican National Committee said this is the most important race in the country. Trump's people have said this is the most important race in the country this year. People on the left have said this is the most important race in the country. And so I've started to think maybe this is the most important race in the country.
Dan Bice is a watchdog columnist for the Journal Sentinel. So, Joy, here we are at the end of Swing State of the Union Season 2. What are your big takeaways?
I definitely didn't realize how little I knew about our state's highest court until we started this podcast. It's been really interesting to learn how much Supreme Courts vary from state to state. Not every state elects their Supreme Court justices, and I think there are pluses and minuses to electing versus appointing, but really any way you go about it, there are pressures on the judiciary that impede its ability to be impartial. That being said, the hyper-partisanship of Wisconsin Supreme Court is an issue in need of a solution. The vast sums of money mixed with the nationalization of these races has just resulted in a lot of misinformation about what the court does. These huge sums of money pouring into this election also make you question how these candidates could possibly be unbiased in their decisions if elected. It just sows doubt in the integrity of the court.
It does. Integrity and money were two things I was thinking about a lot throughout this season, but particularly when producing the season's fourth episode. Like, do these justices really expect us to believe that they can be impartial after receiving millions of dollars in support to get their dream job? Like, that's a big ask of our trust, and I'm not sure they've earned that trust. But I've also been thinking a lot about ad content. Inevitably, in these races, we see ads pointing to a candidate's criminal sentencing record, presumably as evidence that one candidate is tough on crime and their opponent is soft on crime. But the Supreme Court is not a trial court, and justices are never ruling on whether someone is innocent or guilty of a crime. And the fact that millions of dollars are spent on this misleading talking point every cycle is such a missed opportunity to educate on what this sometimes obscure body does and how it impacts Wisconsinites. But this is far from our last rodeo here in Wisconsin. We will have judicial elections every year through 2030. Next year, we'll elect a governor. And as we've discussed in this episode, the groundwork for the 2028 presidential race is being laid as we speak. Welcome to life in the swing state of the Union.
Thank you so much to everyone who made this podcast possible. Swing State of the Union is edited by Becky Mortensen and Emily Files. We also get support from WUWM staff, including Mayan Silver, Chuck Quernbach, Michelle Maternowski, Valeria Navarro-Villegas, Graham Thomas, Aaron Begana, and Anna Stratton. And thank you to all of the WUWM staff for holding us up through producing this series. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Sam Woods. Swing State of the Union is produced by WUWM Milwaukee's NPR, a part of the NPR network. Please subscribe to the Swing State of the Union podcast wherever you like to listen.